Welcome to For the Long Run, the podcast exploring the why behind what keeps runners running long, strong, and motivated. I'm your host, Jonathan Levitt. Through personal and professional connections in the running world, I have the privilege of getting to know some amazing athletes. I've always been fascinated by the psychological aspect of running, and this podcast is aimed at exploring this and much more. I hope you enjoy. This episode is sponsored by UCAN, a sports nutrition product trusted by Olympians like Alexi Pappas and Meb, as well as amateur runners like myself. I've added UCAN into my routine again lately and have really enjoyed the steady energy. Last weekend, the energy on my 16-mile long run was so consistent that I split the exact same distance in hour one as I did in hour two, and more importantly, felt amazing the whole time. Available in bars and powder, you can save 15% on your order at UCAN.co with the code FTLR. I suggest cookies and cream or tropical orange for the powder and the chocolate peanut butter bars. Welcome back. I have Megan and David Roach joining me today on the podcast. My first ever three-person podcast, I believe. David and Megan, thanks so much for joining in.
Thanks so much for having us on here.
It's not our first three-way.
As soon as you said that, Jonathan, I'm like, we're right for the pick.
We looked at each other and there was a moment of like, who's going to do it? And I was like, you're a doctor. I should probably be the one that makes that joke.
That's incredible. Well, for those who enjoyed episode 69 with David, as well as episode, I think, 30-something, this is his three-peat. And I wanted to have Megan on the podcast as well, as apparently many of you have requested. And today is the day. So first question, we'll start with Megan. Who is Megan?
Oh, yeah. I like how that's free. It's powerful.
Are you going to go metaphorical or literal? I would say literal. Literal.
I'll go literal to start. So I'm a trail runner and running coach alongside David. I enjoy quite a bit of science. So I'm a physician. And then right now I'm doing a PhD in epidemiology. And it's kind of funny. I used to have to explain what epidemiology was. Their podcasts, and now most of the world knows, which is slightly unfortunate, but also, you know, fortunate for my podcasting. And yeah, I like gravel biking too. I'm sure we'll talk about that. I like food and dogs, so all kinds of topics.
And David, who is David?
I'm going to go metaphorical. I am a rapidly decaying meat sack. No, I'm a running coach and a runner. And Megan's my wife. And
this is lame. I should do this. Who is David?
I don't know. I have trouble.
Megan, who is David?
No, you need to own this.
Yeah.
Need to, all right. You need to go again and do a proper who is David owning.
Awesome. What do you think I should focus on?
I think you are a top running coach, a lawyer, an amazing dog dad, and a powerful mountain runner.
Okay. I just need Megan to follow me around. It's like a little personal name tag, like you have at a convention.
Incredible. And you guys are both new podcast hosts as well.
Oh, yeah. We forgot to promote. Man, we're losing our synergy efforts.
We're not very good in the promotion side of this.
So yet. Inspired partially by For the Long Run and all the amazing things you did, we started the Some Work, All Play podcast, which has been super fun. And it's always scary to think about how many people are listening to it. And we're hoping to do it forever. So basically, it's just a podcast that's about kind of about running, but mostly about other things.
A lot of riffing, a lot of jokes.
Yeah. So it's a super fast 30 minutes if it, you know, that both digs deep and stays very shallow at the same time. So hopefully there's something for everyone.
Definitely. And it's a podcast that is nobody recommends listening to at 1.5 or 2x speed.
Okay. So I experimented on 1.5 speed yesterday. And
that's horrifying, by the way.
Well, we sound really smart on 1.5 speed. I think it's because it speeds up our thought processes so much.
Well, there's I use a lot of adverbs and so I'm sure it just glosses over those completely, which I would prefer maybe people listen to on 1.5 speed.
Actually, yeah, I think that's true. Like on one speed, I always think of, oh, I should have said something differently whenever I listen to a podcast. On 1.5 speed, there's not enough time. So yeah, no, Jonathan, thank you so much. We, we've loved your podcast from the beginning and listened to most of the episodes. And I think, just how accessible but also fascinating you make it is really inspiring to
us. Yeah, I was just going to say, you really keep it real. And we've tried to, I mean, we're not quite there yet, but we're really trying to emulate that in our podcast.
Yeah, I think the goal is, at least for mine, is to give sort of an insight into what has allowed people to be successful. And it's all of the ups and downs that play into that. And I think that there's a lot of, as we see on Instagram, you know, a lot of highlight reel type activity out there. And I want to talk with exciting and interesting people and hear, like, what is your roller coaster? What does your roller coaster look like? Not what is your peak look like?
Yeah. Well, my roller coaster at the moment looks like Megan and I did a bike ride this morning because I'm trying to pick up my bike game a little bit just so I can, get to spend, she's such a great biker and she loves it, and spend more time with her. And at the turnaround, there's this really steep climb, and we're starting up this steep climb, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to get dropped. I thought we were going all the way. I thought the road went to the top of the mountain. Fortunately, it only went halfway up the mountain, because I was like fully, like, I was reaching into my saddlebag of courage, as the Tour de France announcer would say.
The saddlebag of courage, that needs to be a Strava handle name.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They always did that in the Tour de France.
I thought you were going to say that you're covered in bruises and cuts from your most recent gravel bike fall.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was just pure stupidity. Today was just getting my legs ripped off by you.
What inspired the gravel biking? Megan, I know you've been doing it for a bit, and I've been doing it for a bit, and it's freaking awesome. And it's fun to see more people picking it up.
Yeah, I feel like we need to start a swap gravel team. I know you've been instrumental in promoting that, and I think we need to actually want it.
I think Grayson just got one too. So the swap gravel bike team just got a whole lot faster too.
I'm excited about Grayson on a bike. Grayson is, for those of you who don't know who are listening, is the world mountain running champion. And you put a world mountain running champion on a gravel bike and great things happen. So I'm excited about that. But I think for me personally, I am coming off, I ruptured my hamstring about a year ago, and was told actually in that process that I may not return to running again. And so embraced the idea of becoming a biker, but fortunately I'm back running. I'm back 100%. But using the gravel bike a lot is cross training, and just honestly, I love it. It's a sense of joy. I mix it in with running, and it's a kind of nice decompression at the end of the day.
I always remember the first time we biked together, and you know, we go up a really steep hill, and Megan just dusted my butt to the top of the hill, and I get there, and she just has the biggest grin on her face. It's like a third grade. And you know, so she just has always loved it. Plus, you know, as coaches, we're big fans of cross training, particularly for trail running, but all types of running. And so, you know, I figured I needed to catch up to Megan once I could spend more time with her on the, you know, outside of work.
So. Well, I will just finish by tooting David's horn, because he's not going to do it. He was a great cyclist in college, and so he does not need a lot of catch up time. I basically did this entire ride.
Nice. So you mentioned the ruptured hamstring. I had the, I don't know if I call it pleasure, but pleasure of being in Colorado, in your house the week after that surgery. And it was fascinating to watch, talk about roller coaster, the ups and downs that you had following that surgery. And I know you've talked about your experience on your own podcast, but can you share a little bit more about first what you said when you first woke up and what that meant to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually think it's funny though, because we were supposed to record a podcast together that week. And I remember telling you, I was hobbling around about ready to go into surgery. And I was like, you know, I don't know if I can sit down and talk about running right now. You know, it's like, I've been told I may never run again. Like, I just don't know if I have the strength to do a podcast. And so it's kind of funny that we're coming back full circle right now to record when I feel healthy. And, you know, I get goosebumps right now even thinking about that, and just so grateful. And it was fun. It was super fun to have you here during that surgery period, because you brought a lot of life and joy into our lives during that time. But yeah, so as I mentioned before, I was told by multiple surgeons they may not return to the high level of running again. And ultimately, the surgery was a little bit unknown. They weren't sure of the exact diagnosis and wouldn't know until they opened me up. And so that meant that when I woke up, it was this big, it was almost like I described it as a Schrodinger's hamstring. Like, I'm just not quite sure what's inside of me.
The hamstring is both alive and dead
at the same time. Exactly. Yeah. And so I looked the surgeon in the eyes when I woke up and was like, am I going to run fast again? And I will never forget the look on his face when he's like, yes, you will for sure. And I think David even cried at that point.
I did.
So that's a better experience than the first time I had surgery, when my first reaction after coming to was to moon the nurse. I don't know why. I had a hernia surgery, and I guess she must have asked to see something, and I just pulled my pants down. Well, I guess I wasn't wearing pants, but didn't think I'd say that on a podcast. But my dad reminds me of that all the time.
That's so great. Well, it's funny, like being in the medical profession, I think we get a lot of joy out of interesting patient stories. And I'm sure you made some doctors and nurses days. I'm sure they went home to their families and were like, guess what happened today?
She's talking about it on her nursing podcast.
Exactly. Other healthcare.
12-year-old boy mooning people on in the hospital. Quick question from we're getting a write-in from the fans here. Alex Kurt wants to know, has David's caps lock been fixed?
Actually, we're on this computer right now, and so Megan can attest. What does that shift key look like?
Oh, it's kind of eroded right now, and I think it's actually going to erode all the way through the key.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, people with Macs probably know what it looks like, where the black.
I don't think they do. This is not a normal thing.
I thought this was a joke. Well, yeah. Actually, I thought it was because you're always shouting it on tweets and stuff.
Oh, I think it is because I use caps. I use the shift key for my capital letters. I'm not a caps lock person. And I just use one of the shift key on the left. I was never great in typing, or I broke some of the rules in typing class, I think. So, what we got right now is kind of like, you know, in 100 million years, it'll be like the Grand Canyon. Well, it'll just go all the way down to the center of the earth.
I'm also looking at the keys, the other keys that are eroded. I'm happy to see the M is eroded. I like
to
think
you're
writing some Megans.
Oh, it's because of my login.
Yeah, his password has a Megan in it. Maybe I'm giving away
to you.
You might want to change that password.
I'll tell that story because I need to change my thing anyway. But when I used to be a lawyer full time in the office and stuff, you know how you have to have like a password and then sometimes you have to update it periodically, and they created a new thing and the IT person needed my login for some reason. And I was like, okay, my login is I love Megan 33. And he was like, this guy was really cool. He's like, that's pretty lame. That's a pretty lame password. So yeah, don't try that because I'm going to change that. I definitely
will. My passwords are always swear words until I realized this issue that sometimes you do have to give people passwords.
Yeah. Megan has, I'm not going to say your go-to password. It's very funny.
Jumping back to Megan, you mentioned epidemiology. What is it like? What's your experience like in 2020 having your career sort of brought to the forefront and being a part of some interesting research?
Yeah, it's tough. I think I'm really empathetic to what a lot of people are going through right now. I think I've seen it in coaching. I've seen it in epidemiology. I've seen it in the hospital where there's just so much uncertainty in the world right now. I said this yesterday on our own podcast. Like, I think I don't know is a great proxy right now for everything that's going on in COVID. And we're starting to find out more information, whether that's related to treating COVID or vaccines or recovery processes or any of this. But I think it's been a lot of unknowns in the field. I think even within my own epidemiology department, I've seen some of my mentors, they all have different models for what this is going to look like. And it's just fascinating to be at the center of it. And the more that I understand, the more that I understand we don't know.
Yeah. And Megan was she was telling me back in January that, you know, that it was going to unfold similarly to how it has. So like, while we don't know, there is some, you know, some of the trajectory stuff, like, you know, they've been right all along, which
is pretty cool. It's funny because I think back in February, I told David, I was like, the Olympics are going to get canceled. And I told a few other people that, and they were like, what are you talking about? You're crazy. Yeah. Absolutely not.
I've learned that Megan is right. Like,
that's a good lesson to learn.
No. Yeah. And it's not like any of that, like husband, wife, like, oh, wife's always right. It's like, literally when we disagree. Yeah. Yeah, I am like, you know, I passionately disagree. And then I realize like 15 minutes later, I'm like, oh, crap. And then I'm like, let's change the subject and hope this never comes up. And hopefully I learned my lesson.
But I've seen a lot of runners struggle with it recently as races are starting to happen again and just trying to navigate the differences in race setup. You know, we're having people now doing wave starts. We're having, you know, races that were supposed to be scheduled get canceled and just working with a lot of athletes to deal with the uncertainty of all of that.
So the uncertainty is something that I'm really curious about. I just had Peter Bromka on the podcast and we talked a little bit about his motivation, and he's not motivated to do a time trial. I have mostly been in that space and am sort of interested in, you know, once this humidity passes, racing something or time trialing something. But how are you guys dealing with athletes or coaching athletes who are at a loss for where to go with all this uncertainty, and within the context of David, the last time we caught up, you gave your four point plan for runners in April of 2020, and I think a lot of that advice was awesome. And have you found that your coaching has changed in the last few weeks and months, or is it much of the same party line of let's figure out what, you know, how to get you excited?
Yeah, I mean, what we try to emphasize always is that it's about that long-term process. One, I mean, as I was on the podcast last time, like, that's about the physiology of it. Like, 2020 is a blip on the long-term radar. It really sucks in the moment for a lot of people, some more than others. But it's not that big of a deal when you're thinking about long-term training. And the way we structure training philosophy and methodology is all based on that long-term growth. I think the harder part is, like, what gets you excited when you wake up each morning? And we're definitely seeing issues with that, particularly, honestly, with pro athletes. I think sometimes for them, you know, they structure their lives so much around these fulcrum points, but it goes for everyone because, like, regardless of speed, regardless of place, like, why push yourself right on whatever it is that you're pushing yourself on unless you're building to some intermediate goal? Like, it's all of our brains have that issue. And so what we're really trying to emphasize is that each day isn't like this test that, or like, you're building to some test. Each day is this chance to explore yourself and, you know, your growth and your character in a really unique way that we might never get again. So 2020 isn't something to be scared of or nervous about or like demotivated by. It's something to get excited about because this opportunity that we have right now of like, what are you capable of when you aren't constrained by external factors? Like that question, like we can all answer that. And so, you know, by reframing it to this opportunity, I think it's a great chance to grow. I mean, we've seen athletes that in April were so demotivated are now like freaking rocking. And so maybe that demotivation process is part of it. Like you have to go through that to get to this point.
I think adding to that as well is the concept of flexibility. So what I've been encouraging with athletes is that to be a successful athlete in the long term, you really do have to embrace flexibility. Like things are going to come up. You're going to have to adapt your training schedule. You have to listen to your body. And that flexibility allows that long-term consistency. And now is a great time to practice flexibility. Like I've seen a lot of athletes struggle, you know, whether they have kids at home or they're working from home for the first time, or just, you know, their days are inherent, the structure of their days has inherently changed. And it's a great time to practice flexibility and just going with the flow and being okay with it and adapting on the fly and finding joy in that process.
And what a good metaphor for life, because all of this stuff that we're, all the things that we pursue, like, you know, it all has this uncertain endpoint that really just keeps moving forward. And so right now is such a good chance to fully explore that, to sit down with that feeling that, you know, where you don't want to do something because you don't have this goal in mind. And it's like, wait, what happens if instead of thinking that way, I'm like, no, this is awesome. This is a chance to actually grow. And so we're trying to help athletes on that process, trying to go down that process ourselves, but also understanding that like, it's easier said than done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what are you doing, Jonathan, with that? Like, I mean, you've been getting back to training and absolutely crushing it. And I think being really disciplined and all that, but like, how are you balancing that?
So I'm finding it to be a fun time to experiment. And I think that I'm learning the benefits of flexibility in a way that I've never learned it before. Because if I miss, you know, I didn't do my workout today. And if I miss my Wednesday workout, you know, 3 weeks before a race or 5 weeks before a race, it's going to mentally have a different impact than if I miss a Wednesday workout that's, you know, 47 weeks before a race. But if I'm able to learn how to change on the fly, like you said, and realize that it's just one brick in the house, it's all part of it, and it's all part of that adaptation. And yeah, it's been like, we're doing 5 days a week of running and have been for the last 2.5 months or so. And that's a change. We did 6 days a week of running last year and, you know, ran X number of miles a week. And now I'm biking and It's been fun to switch it up and add in all of the bike miles and see roads and trails in a way that I've, you know, never seen them before.
I love following your Instagram because it's like, I feel like I'm on a journey of the East Coast, and then every once in a while, lobster or like something really tasty that pops up in there but
without the humidity, thank God.
Oh yeah, that humidity's tough.
What a nightmare that is. Yeah, what I've noted, Jonathan, with you, and like, you know, stop me if anything is too personal. It's that, like, you know, you're experiencing the same ups and downs, or especially the downs, you know, that other people are. And one thing that I've really been inspired by, not just as an athlete but as a person, is like, yeah, like an analogy might be that you're tasting this thing, right? Like, and you're not sure exactly what it's going to be like each day. And so sometimes it is like nasty, but you digest that feeling and move on. And, you know, I've seen that you're fully like savoring the good times, but also realizing that the bad times, like, you can work through it, especially because you're doing the work outside of, you know, running and thinking, like, you know, you're doing everything else you need to do too. So I think that's been awesome. And then, you know, specifically this week is a great example. You know, when you had your back pain when you woke up on, what day was that?
Yesterday, Tuesday.
Okay. And so, you know, so like what happened next for the people listening? Like, I think it's a good lesson of how athletic, you know, even while you're dreaming big and shooting for the stars in this time, like how athletes can think about their training. So like, what did you do? Like once you felt that, like, you know, I thought it was great because like, I didn't make that decision for you. You were just already on it.
Yeah. So, I was running, I was probably like 2 miles into my run and I was like, this feels different. And I laid down on the trail and, stretched my back and I was like, please God, nobody go past me at this point. Like, I don't want anybody to see me look lying down on the trail. But that helped a little bit. And, you know, I ran a couple more miles and did an out and back and sort of shaved 2 miles off of it. And I came back and I was like, I'm going to cut this one short. And then I messaged you and said, well, that didn't feel right. Thoughts. And so we, you know, decided to drop the workout today and just run easy miles. And then, I sort of made the call this morning or suggested that might be an idea, and you confirmed that was, you know, a good idea to bike instead of run.
Well, I love that. And, you know, what I'm seeing there is that now is not the time to take risks, right? Like, you know, it's a time to push and go for it. But, you know, when you feel something, just take a step back. And Megan's been great with that too, with her biking. And, you know, and you don't even need to crush it. You can just take time off if you don't have a bike or something.
Definitely.
Well, I think the great thing about seasoned athletes like you is that once you've been through an injury process or once you've taken time off and come back, you realize that most of the time you come back stronger anyways. And so that's just like confidence points in the bank to, you know, take an easy day or to adjust to a bike.
Yeah. I mean, I feel fitter today than I've felt in a long time. And I PR'd my marathon by 20 minutes last year. And like, I feel fitter now than I did then. So it's like, okay, this process is working. I'm going to continue to respect it. By the way, Megan, if you want to experience the full East Coast experience while you're watching my Instagram, just dump a bucket of water on your head prior to watching the Instagram post.
I love that.
And it'll mimic the humidity.
Yeah, we can do like an East Coast ice bucket challenge. I feel like that's like the new area. And then go for a run and that's sopping wet. Yeah. And that's how we can go.
Is impossible on the East Coast.
It's way harder than altitude. Yeah,
way
it's
harder. I would rather train on top of a 14,000 foot mountain than have to go to Boston for one day.
Wait, so
like,
so I did.
Yeah,
I did a. I paced a friend for a workout down in Woods Hole, which is like the southwesternmost point of Cape Cod. So you're like right on the ocean, and in theory, you know, it's nice, it's windy, whatever, cool ocean breeze. The dew point was 76 and she did and that's like pretty much as high as it can possibly get in the Northeast. And she did a 2x2 mile workout with 3 minutes standing rest and finished and said she had just spent a month in Utah. This is Dana Giordano. She's a pro for BAA. And she ran her 2x2 mile with the same split, but like 8 seconds under the or slower than the goal. And she was like, what the hell? That was harder than any run in Park City. And I was like, are you familiar with dew points? Today is the worst day of the summer, like by a long shot. He's like, nope, what are dew points? So yes, long way to say humidity is awful and I'd much rather be at 12,000 feet.
It's funny. I have a hashtag trending in a lot of logs of athletes who are training on the East Coast right now. It's just like hashtag blood plasma gains.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, you know, it is good for fitness. It just doesn't
feel
in
good.
The moment. It does not feel.
Yeah.
Well, what I like too, sometimes that dew point will drop and athletes get really excited. Yeah. And I'm like, this is your fitness. Your fitness,
yeah,
is there.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, for anyone that's struggling through that, like, the fitness is there. Just give yourself a chance, get out there and, you know, if anything, it'll just make you stronger and stronger. The reason that it's harder than, like I was saying, 14,000 feet is because you're actually, you know, adapting fundamentally with your hemoglobin and all these other things that the recent studies have pointed out. But it does sometimes suck in the moment. We're both East Coast origin people. So we have sympathy even as we're like, you know, chuckling away in Colorado.
Yeah, that's true. I always forget about that. The mid-Atlantic... Mid-Atlantic origins.
Yeah, yeah. We spent some good times in North Carolina sweating away together.
I know, yeah. We met in North Carolina. So, you know, the lack of sweat here is the unique thing for us. Like, it's so funny in Colorado that, like, I do laundry once every, like, 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay, you're weird, though. I finish runs, and I could not rewear clothes that I ran in. It would be a disaster.
Maybe I have weak sweat glands.
You have weak sweat glands, and you also don't smell.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think
that's an evolutionary might just be my perk.
Yeah, my pheromones are just like
no. I think objectively, you don't smell.
I like your smell too.
Which leads me to my next question.
Oh my God, I can't wait the next question.
So a phrase that both of you have used a lot recently, maybe, you know, this year, last year, shoot your shot. Where did that come from and what does it mean to each of you?
So, you know, I'm not sure what the exact origin of that was. I'm sure it's been used forever, but where we heard it in particular and where it really resonated with us was from author Shea Serrano, who's written a bunch of best-selling books like Basketball and Other Things and the Rap Year book. And he's amazing on Twitter, amazing writer in person. But essentially what he's pushing his followers to do is to just go for it, to put yourself out there. And, you know, like, he's a big basketball fan. He's like, when the best three-point shooters make 40-some percent of their shots, right? So, like, but every time they think it's going in. And the only way they get to that point is by missing, like, hundreds of thousands of shots along the way. And so his story is actually really interesting. So Shea Serrano was a middle school teacher that was just writing on the side. And so he submitted a number of stories to local Texas like magazines and things. One of them got picked up. And then another one got picked up. And then someone saw one of his articles. And then he went to write for the old ESPN website, Grantland. And from there, he got, in other words, he just kept grinding and putting himself out there. But it would have been so easy for him not to do that. And so we say shoot your shot because like 100% of the best of opportunities come from that. And it means that you're going to fail a crap ton. And, you know, as coaches, we're really lucky in that we get to see these failures firsthand and be there for people through them. But I think sometimes like it's really hard to fail. And, you know, not everyone has that. Like the understanding that it's not just okay, it's the whole point. So
I love that point about the support. Mm-hmm. I think that when I think about shoot your shot, I think about the unconditional support often that it requires to take to shoot a shot. Like I think for me, I've always been the sort of person like I pump fake, I hesitate. Like it takes me a little bit, like in terms of basketball terms, to actually shoot that shot. And I think from what I've seen is that a lot of women are often similar. Like I think women sometimes struggle to put themselves out there or to be vocal or to do these things. And it's like an inherent.
Because of like the implicit societal biases.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like we need to unconditionally support women. We need to unconditionally support our friends, our families so that they can shoot their shot and they can have a safety net for if they miss, they can keep taking their shots.
Yeah. And so that's what we aim to do is like for everyone, because, you know, we can't be there for that many people like individually, but hopefully if like we can get this idea out there that like, and do it in kind of a goofy way, right? Like the idea of shoot your shot is not like, oh, this is a serious philosophical discussion. Yeah. It's like, oh man, we're Steph Curry just stepping across the half court and launching. And you're watching that game and you're like, oh, Steph, I don't know about that shot. And then he's just like he poses. He's like, this is going in. And then when it clanks, he's just like, man, I'm going to do it again next time down the four.
Yeah, I think.
So that's where we're at.
It's awesome. And it's sort of the push that I needed to take more risks in life, I guess, both running and mostly not running. So it's been super helpful just to conceptualize needing to take more risks and do things along those lines.
Well, then yeah, right? Like, you know, your podcast was the ultimate shooting your shot. I remember you talking to me about that, like what the title was going to be. And I suggested some terrible title that I'm so glad you didn't don't remember what it was. And then, you know, we started a podcast because you shot your shot, you know, like we had people, you know, we had had that platform for years, but decided not to do it because we're like, well, it's not our thing. Like, you know, like we should know more, or do more, or plan more. And then one day Megan's just like, David, podcast now. And I was like, okay.
Well, I think it gets to the fact that I think there's like inherent muscle memory behind shooting your shot. It's like you shoot your shot in one thing, yeah, and then, you know, that thing and other things then become, it's like, eh, I'm just going to toss this up there and see what happens. And it just, again, it's like that feedback loop where it just like keeps feeding into itself.
But be a little bit careful when you shoot your shot, because my bike ride, like, so my first ride I did on my gravel bike, you know, I was really feeling myself and feeling good about it. And of course, was like, well, maybe I'm going to be going for Strava segments and stuff now. So of course, I decided not to brake around a gravel turn, immediately slid out to the side. And, you know, Megan is currently looking at, like, my body looks like Two-Face from Batman. It's like all over. So sometimes, you know, be careful with shooting your shot when, like, your health is at risk. But short of that, like, the idea is that it's all, you know, we're trying to make it light, you know? We're trying to introduce lightness into people's lives so that, like, we're not scared of it, because whether you make it or miss it, the whole point is just to shoot it.
Yeah, and I think the idea of putting yourself out there and taking risks and all of that stuff is something that needs to be reinforced more. And I think that, like, there are a lot of people have talked about how comfortable people are compared to how life might used to be, which is a terrible analogy in today's day and age. But let's pretend we're in January or last November, because Megan knew what was happening in January. I think this idea of discomfort and getting uncomfortable is necessary.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the problem is that comfort is often the ultimate illusion.
Yeah.
You know, what feels and looks comfortable is often accompanied by mental health struggles and self-doubt and all these issues that it's not true. Like, it's not, you know, it's not a hammock where you can lie down. And if that is, like, if someone has that pure contentedness, like, that's freaking awesome. And you can, like, that life that you want to live is amazing. But, like, I think for a lot of people, when they don't put themselves out there, like, it actually leads to feelings of, like, you know, their self-worth gets tied up in this vision of themselves that isn't the real them. Like, every single person listening to this has unlimited capabilities in every different direction, right? Like, sometimes that'll mean that you're an Olympian in running. But, you know, that has other genetic factors involved. But, like, every single one of us has this huge untapped talent in some direction.
And I think that gets at the point of learning.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't shoot your shot, you're not going to learn where your talent
is. Yeah.
Like, how are you going to know if you're an Olympic level runner if you don't shoot your shot? You know what I mean? Like, you need to shoot your shot.
Or the best podcaster or the writer or the partner or the supporter or coach.
Or you might learn that you're not supposed to be any of that. And that's okay too, because you're saving time.
Oh my God. I have learned that so many times in things. I've learned that with being a lawyer.
It's freeing. It's like, this is not my calling and I'm going to do something different and use, you know, this set of skills and talents or whatever it is in some other area. And it's like, I don't know. It's like this burden is being lifted off your shoulders.
I love that. I learned that with being a lawyer. You know, I had a couple $100,000 of student loans invested into being a lawyer. And at one point Megan was like, David, you know, your calling can be something else. And it was so freeing that shooting my shot on that in that instance ended up being just like leaving behind the burden of my own expectations. Right. And so, you know, I think for a lot of people, like one of our proudest moments is when people quit their jobs, not because we want people to like pursue some ideal that doesn't exist, but because it shows the ultimate, like, let's see what happens next. And that's where the fun, you know, it's the adventure moment happens, not in the question of like, oh, I know how my next 40 years are going to unfold. Adventures unfold. It's like, I have no idea what's going to happen in the next 40 days.
I love that. Thanks again to UCAN for sponsoring this episode. I've run 2 marathons fueled on UCAN and have experimented with it over the years and have found quite a positive impact on some specific health-related metrics that I'll be following again over the coming months. Typical sports nutrition products aren't something you would consume throughout the day, but many use UCAN as part of their daily routine for healthy energy. And I can't get enough of the chocolate peanut butter bars. Superstarch is the underlying carbohydrate in UCAN, and it provides long-lasting energy by keeping your blood sugar stable, and it is super easy on the stomach. Available in powder and bars, you can save 15% on your order at UCAN.co with the code FTLR, like for the long run. I'm going to ask you a question that I asked Amelia on the podcast earlier this week. Why are you here? Why do you think you're on this earth?
Oh my gosh.
We're both staring at each other. No, you go first.
And I actually saw this. And I was like, oh, I'm going to think about that before the podcast starts. And then I did not think about it at all. You know, I think when you start to dig down into deep questions of existential meaning, it's you're chasing your own tail to a certain extent. So I think it's amazing. I think if someone can find a deep faith that provides a foundation for all they do, that is amazing. And I would never begrudge someone for that. You know, for me personally, like spiritually or whatever, I don't necessarily have that deep grounding. And so what I find, you know, solace in is that we're here not because we have some broader purpose and have to do this thing or have to be a great coach or have to be a great podcaster, have to be anyone outside of our circle. It's because we can just be. And so
I think the Vonnegut quote really adds to that. So when you were talking about that, I'm like, the Vonnegut quote's coming and I'm going to say it first.
You did. You nailed it.
But it's, you know, we're here to help each other get through this thing, whatever it is. And I think that's, I got that quite right.
You're like, Funny. No, yeah, I love it. Yeah.
But I think that is truly beautiful. It's like, you know, we're here to support each other. We're here to uplift each other. And, you know, we're here for all of the crap that comes along through that process.
Yeah. And then I like to combine it with the other Vonnegut quote that was in the same chapter. So Megan said, we're here to help each other get through this thing, whatever it is. And then we're here on earth to fart around and don't let anyone tell you different. And so basically, you know, every spiritual system tries to get at the same type of question, you know, the question you're asking. And it comes up with different answers. You know, it can be the Vonnegut, which is like a humanist. He was the president of the Humanist Society at one point. It can be Buddha, who's like smiling at the cosmic joke, or, you know, even nihilism or atheism, where you deny some of this meaning. And that's also meaningful to people. I think the main point is just not to, you know, not to pursue some eventuality where it's like, if I don't have these answers, I am not enough. You know, whatever lets you feel like you are enough the way you are is the best way to get through the day. And so for us personally, it's like, well, we're no matter what the answer is to that question, the one fact is that all of us are in that same bubble together, or in that same stew together. And so, you know, while we're in the stew, let's try to like,
well, I think feeling existing along in that same stew gives me a lot of empathy for people.
Yeah.
Because it's like, people are also thinking about this, struggling with this, like dealing with all kinds of things in life. And I think that's a helpful thing.
I love that. So in conclusion, the reason we're here is stew.
Stew. What kind of stew? Beef. It's beef stew.
Beef stew.
Yeah, of course.
I thought that was zero.
Yeah. Everything kind of came together at once. So I think we have a new spiritual system here, the beef stew framework.
No, but jokes aside, the you are enough concept is something that is consistent in your book and your social presence and everything that both of you put out into the world. And every time I share something that has that quote or that line, half a dozen people email me and say, or DM or whatever, and say like, oh my God, I needed to hear that today. So what do you have to say to people who might need to hear that a little bit more in their life?
So the main takeaway is that your best will never be enough unless it's always enough. You know, striving is beautiful, but if self-improvement doesn't come from a place of self-acceptance, there will be no light at the end of the tunnel where like you accomplish something that lets you say, okay, now I am that standard, right? And so, you know, when we're saying you are enough, it's not to be like, you shouldn't train as hard as you can or start a podcast or shoot your shot or any of this stuff. It's that whether you like make the best podcast or win the race or even feel like, you know, you're happy or whatever it is, it doesn't matter, because whether you do those things or not, you're still enough. So it takes the pressure off, hopefully, and lets people know that like, you know, the benefit of there not being this overarching meaning that we're all striving to, you know, fulfill some destiny is that, you know, where you are right now is great. And we're moving forward because the adventure, the exploration part of it is beautifully fun and something we all share, but not because, like, you know, if we don't get to the end of this video game, we're, you know, a video game called life, we're going to like not count as in some way.
I do think it's helpful, though, to think about that in terms of being a philosophy. Mm-hmm. And so I've worked with athletes before who've come to me and said, like, hey, Megan, I can't look myself into the mirror today and say I'm enough. And that's okay, too. Yeah. Like, you are enough is this beautiful framework. It's this beautiful way to conceptualize life. But like, if you're not there for whatever reason, like whether that's anxiety, whether that's depression, whether you just like wake up and have a bad day and don't feel enough, like, that's okay. It's like this overarching thing, but it doesn't have to be this, like, every day you wake up and you're like, I'm enough today. I feel great. And, I think that's like a really important thing to couch it in too, is just that, like, this is a helpful thing to think about, but like thinking you're enough 100% of the time is often impossible.
Yeah. And well, and, you know, the idea being you're amazing when you're not amazing.
Exactly.
Right. Like,
yeah. And, but because honestly, that's human. When you are down and low, yeah. But when you're down and low, sometimes it's hard to see that or hard to conceptualize that.
Sure.
And that's okay.
And that's where the, like, we're all in it together really comes in.
Because you have to lean on that support system of people to tell you that you are enough.
Oh yeah. And that's why Megan's made such a huge difference in my life from when we met, is like, I know that no matter what happens, she's going to say, you're amazing. And I think sometimes people bristle when we say that to them, like, you're amazing. And, you know, what we really try to explain is that's not saying like, you're amazing because of this. It's saying you are amazing because you exist. You know, because you're getting through this thing, whatever it is, as Vonnegut said. And that's why, you know, we're here to help each other get through this thing, whatever it is. Doesn't mean like we're here to feed the hungry necessarily, or whatever task is associated with that. Those things count. It's that we're here to just help other people, to support them, to give them that confidence that, like, you know, they have a backstop. They have the net under the tightrope. And so, you know, Megan's been my net. And, you know, our hope is that, like, we can broaden that net out a little bit and help other people do that too. But we doubt ourselves all the time. Like, you know,
all the time.
I don't want to say what I was. I was a punk ass bitch this morning. I know we cussed on that. To Megan, you know, and it was great. And we went on a ride and talked about it.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's because you ripped off my legs on Rabbit Mountain. Take this. I am enough, and you're
too
lost.
Much.
Yeah, exactly. That's perfect.
That's amazing. Switching gears a little bit, bike pun obviously intended. What are some tips for fueling and water and hydration on hot summer runs?
Like that. It's very topical right now. So we tell athletes just more is usually better. So often we work with athletes just who are not fueling enough. Just always erring on the side of more.
Yeah. So I mean, to put numbers on it, 16 to 20 ounces of fluid per hour is a good place to start. Adjusting for your personal needs. Don't die. This isn't health advice. And then 200 to 300 calories an hour. And the calories part, so one, the hydration, I think we all understand that there is no benefit to dehydration, no scientific benefit to it. No one is arguing that. So we agree on the hydration. The fueling part, I think, has gotten some pseudoscience mixed in with it that has led some people to think that, okay, if I fuel my runs less, I will become more fat adapted or my lipid metabolism will improve, or, you know, something like, oh, it'll be good for fat burning, or it'll make my body better or whatever. So there becomes this stigma against fueling runs.
And anecdotally, actually, we've seen a higher rate of injuries in people who are not fueling their long
runs.
Yes,
sky so much higher.
And there's probably a lot of confounding variables that go along with that. But I think that's something that we've noticed and something that we're really going to keep track of going forward.
And then the recent studies on deficits that are run like that show that especially for female athletes, the hormonal and stress related impacts, but also men, can cause these cascades of negative physiological consequences. So even if you don't feel like you need fuel, which many fit athletes could run 4 hours and not fuel and be fine, the point isn't that, like, what, you know, what can you do? It's what should you do? And so, you know, we really encourage athletes to fuel almost every long run. And the most interesting finding of all that is failing to fuel, having these higher within day deficits, also leads to lower base metabolic rate. And often the studies show worse body composition, independent of total calorie intake. So, you know, if someone is dealing with eating disorder thoughts or anything like that, the point is that by fueling, you also increase your metabolism and get your body healthier so that you can move towards this place of like loving yourself in your actions and like, you know, moving towards full health.
And really quick too, I think starting that fueling process early on long runs is helpful. So sometimes I see athletes who aren't, you know, they're not fueling until 2 hours into the long run. And it's like, that's already way too late. So we often have athletes start around 45 to 60 minutes into the
Oh my gosh, Megan has emphasized this. So she's my coach. She's emphasized this so much with me because I'm one of those athletes that could run all day without fuel. And, you know, a good example is I did a longer run a couple weeks ago that was like really long, like a harder effort. And by the end, I had a little fanny pack. I actually packed a fanny pack. It was so lame. But in there were, I think, 20 gels or something. And by the end, I was like, well, I might as well finish these gels, and was taking one every 15 minutes. And I was able to finish at a full out sprint when it got back to the road from the technical trail, which has never happened for me before on these ultralight stuff. So, you know, it's performance for sure. And I think we all know that to a certain extent, but it's also just long-term health and how you adapt to the training you're doing.
Definitely. What's the dynamic like coaching each other?
That's topical.
Yeah.
It's good.
I think it's infinite patience with each other, yeah. And understanding that, like, you know, we're both headstrong in our own unique ways, and that's okay.
I think for me personally, I used to project a lot of my frustrations onto David or onto the coaching relationship. So I think if I got injured, I'd be like, well, it was because of those damn strides you gave me. Yeah. Or, you know, if I wasn't feeling good, it was like, oh, you pushed me too hard. And it was like a self-defense mechanism. And I think the more I've learned that and the more I just own that, and even sometimes I can like, it's like, I have to like stop myself before saying it. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm projecting right now. I think that's been a helpful realization for me.
Yeah. And what Megan's helped me learn, as like any relationship, it relies on full communication. Like, I think I tend towards being like, if things aren't perfect, they're terrible. You know, like, and
that was related to our argument this morning.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, like, I'm still growing at that, but it really applies to coaching, which is, you know, you're allowed to say something that is critical, and it doesn't mean that like the sky is falling.
Really? You've got a big smile on your face. Yeah. This is great. Maybe we should record this and put this on like our kitchen.
This is on record. This is on record.
Yeah. But I've grown at that, right?
Like, you've been amazing at
that. Yeah. And so like, I mean, I think that applies to everyone and everything. It's like, you know, in your any type of relationship, whether it's coaching or not, trying to get more comfortable with communication in every direction. So like when we say you are enough to athletes, we also want them to say in return, I hate myself, or whatever they feel, with the understanding that that is part of the whole, you know, that is how we grow, is like putting it all out there. And yeah, so, you know, I think it's been really fun to do the coaching each other thing through everything, because, you know, it's been from the highest highs to the lowest lows. And I think it's really helped us grow as like a pair.
I was going to say, I think it's made our relationship stronger, especially in terms of communication.
And Megan's the best coach in the world, so it's amazing.
Awesome. A couple more light questions again from the audience. Is woohoo something, first I'm going to need you guys to say it, is that something I'd say after every interval or just at the end of the workout?
Woohoo! And we did it. We harmonized.
Well, yeah, David did the finger countdown.
Yeah. Over here, I did one, two, three.
Or 3, 2, 1?
Oh, yeah. Good question. 1, 2, 3, because I was controlling.
3, 2, 1 in my language.
But yeah, no, woohoo is just, you know, we want everyone to try to reflect all the time on, like, you know, while life can be serious and all these other things, it's also good to be goofy and silly. And, you know, with running in particular, like, you know, we'll say, put your arms out and do airplane arms when you don't feel like it. You know, like when you feel like it, that stuff comes naturally, but sometimes it's hard. Or just use your voice, like scream at the top of a mountain or whatever. And so woohoo is kind of like how we try to embody that, where it's like, you know, woo, it's like, how can you take yourself seriously when you do that? So that's a serious answer to a question that probably didn't want it.
How often or on which kind of runs do you listen to music or podcasts?
I listen to music on almost every run. Whether or not I hear the music is a different variable. So I think on workout days, I either very much hear the music or I don't at all. So I'm pretty polarized on workout days. I find it's just helpful to get out the door. I think I personally love music. Like, I love lyrics. I love all kinds of music. And so it just, it kind of creates like an interesting bundle of running and music.
Yeah. Same for me, but I don't use it for like hard efforts or anything like that, just because I want to be, for me, like Megan totally tunes it out. I mean, to the point that when she says she doesn't hear it, I mean, she would have no idea. Her music actually right now is still playing on your headphones.
Oh, I didn't realize
and
that.
Never turned off. Because she just we had a great bike and she had no idea it was playing. And for me though, I sometimes start to dissociate from the activity I'm doing, which I don't want to do as like, I mean, I want to be more engaged with what I'm doing. So my thing, I'm more of a podcast person than Megan too. Like on easy days, I'll usually do like some sort of comedy podcast.
Nice. So I normally listen to country music, and I remember one day, I forget what the workout was, but you told me to listen to gangster rap, and it was it was like incredible. And now I like insert a few of those songs into my workout playlist, which is mostly country.
I'm a big rap fan. Rap is a pretty large percentage of my running music.
Yeah, me too.
Nice. One other question that I had was, and I'm actually forgetting it now.
Which I think is the best metaphor of all. Like, you know, there's no need to have setups or anything like that. Or maybe the better metaphor there is that like when we're trying to do anything, like we've been talking about this with our podcast or writing or all that, it's like, if you try to make things really good, like, it's just too much pressure, you know?
Definitely.
So just make things.
Yeah. That's
like, you know, what we is create anything. It like, whether it's a sandcastle or a podcast
and toss it out there into the world and see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And don't worry at all what people say, like, you know, outside of like people you love and respect, like you don't want to make any hurt anyone, but like outside of that, just, you know, create for its own sake.
I love that. I think that's a good place to wrap up today. Where can we find you if we want to follow along with your adventures, and where's your podcast and all that good stuff?
I think the most entertaining place is probably Addy Dog's Instagram, which is also David's Instagram.
Wow.
Addy does stuff. I am on Instagram a little slightly less entertaining at Meg Runs Happy.
Oh no, you crush me in Instagram.
I don't know about that.
Well, I get to write from a dog.
And then our podcast, the Work All Play podcast. We realize there's a lot of podcasts out there called swap podcasts that are
very
not
different
running
topic.
Related.
Yep.
Play is probably the best.
Probably relates back to the three-way that we started.
Exactly.
It all comes full circle.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're everywhere on the net. So if you ever have questions or there's any way, I don't know, you just need someone to talk to about something, like always reach out to us. You know, we're out there. And yeah, Jonathan, we appreciate you so much. Like, you know, we've been talking about different things about life a lot, and your name comes up all the time of like someone that we wish, you know, to emulate with our own things, like how we present on social media or all these other things. So I know that's probably taken a lot of work, and we appreciate it just immensely.
Yeah, it definitely came up with social media. I was like, you're just such a joy in the world, and you
lift everyone up.
Yeah. Like, and it's obvious
without any
media.
I mean, clearly, like, we all have egos and we all want it to reflect on ourselves at some level, even if it's like a base part of our brain that we try to, but you know, you make everyone feel so loved. And I imagine people bristle against that sometimes too. Like, there are probably people out there that don't respect that as much. And we just want to say that it's so seen by so many people,
it.
And not just
and
us.
And also, I realize there's hustle behind that too.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm inspired by that.
I appreciate that. Well, thank you for that. And yes, it's interesting that even like that kind of stuff people push back on. It's like, it's something that I've talked about a lot with Amelia. Like, if you're not ruffling people's feathers and if you don't have haters, you're not trying hard enough.
Yeah. I think that's probably a good place to end it for everyone. Because I think, you know, especially a lot of what we're saying today is the types of things that will resonate with people that want to please others, right? Like, you know, all this uplifting, positive energy type stuff often comes from backgrounds that are focused on, well, I want people around me to be happy and things like that. But, you know, I think part of the growth process and knowing you are enough is that you just got to have a force field around yourself for people that want to that don't want you to think that you're not. And often that results in them like projecting things, but even if it doesn't, even if it comes from this pure, like just totally genuine place of hating your guts, it's like, you're not for them.
Right.
You know, it's not that you suck. You're not for
definitely.
Them. So, you know, yeah, I think for everyone listening, like, the next time you get a hater, try to celebrate it. Toast a bottle of wine to that, because there's a lot of beauty in that too.
Definitely. Awesome. Well, thanks so much. I hope to be back in Boulder sharing tacos and scratching Addie's soft. Actually, that was one last question. Maggie Rush wanted to ask, how soft is Addie? She looks super soft.
Oh, she's very soft.
She has a memory foam.
Actually, right now she's mud, though. I was noticing last time, what's going on?
I don't think she's had a bath for like 2 years.
She just gives herself baths. That's like her jam.
Yes.
She just self-cleans.
So she actually smells better than my clothes. So
definitely smells better than my clothes.
Yeah. Nice.
Addie is there for anyone that needs a, when you're in Boulder and you need a scratch.
Amazing. Can't wait. Talk to you guys soon.
Awesome. You're amazing,
Jonathan.
You. And thank you for everyone.
Thank you.
That's it for today's episode. Like many long runs, it's sad when it has to end. I hope you join in next week on For the Long Run. And in the meantime, happy trails. If you've enjoyed this episode, it would mean a lot to me if you shared it so that others can find it and enjoy it too.